We are now on the stretch of road between the Divide and the Homer Tunnel, which is less than 20 minutes from here. Now that we're in true mountain territory, we're also in avalanche territory. So I'd like to tell you a bit about our avalanche awareness scheme, which helps us manage the risk. With its dramatic blend of snow-capped summits and steep slopes, avalanches have always been a feature of this landscape. They can flatten a forest in seconds, so the better we are able to predict them, the lower the danger. When this road was being built, several workers were killed by avalanches. But we haven't lost anyone since a worker died in 1983. The Avalanche Awareness Program was put in place very soon after. It's one of the most advanced and extensive in the world. This stretch of road is part of the 21-kilometer avalanche zone, which spans the Homer Tunnel and has avalanche control gates at each end. If you're driving between May and November, there's a strict no-stopping rule within the zone. In other words, between these gates. This is the only public road in New Zealand that's affected by avalanches. 40 avalanche paths run across this stretch, but we know where they are, and they're monitored as part of the program. The many systems in place have ensured that although 1,000 cars and buses can travel this route every day, no drivers have been injured by an avalanche for more than a decade. Works Infrastructure, which is contracted by Transit New Zealand to monitor the snow, has an observation post at 1,800 metres on Mount Crosscut, from which they get a clear view of this valley and the Homer Tunnel. During certain weather events, teams of technicians head up there to a little hut perched high on a crag and built to withstand winds of 300 kilometres per hour. After a five-year study of these mountains, scientists were more able to predict how our snow behaves in certain weather conditions, such as warm sun, heavy rain, blizzards or high winds. With the new equipment and study data, technicians can now tell where the snow builds up, what its temperature is, and where it would go if it slipped. By combining and analyzing all this information, they're pretty good at evaluating the risk and can close the road if necessary. When a build-up looks precarious, they can use explosives to bring the avalanche down safely while the road's closed. Down here in the valley, Transit New Zealand also spends about $800,000 a year clearing the road of avalanche blockages, day and night, sometimes in horrendous weather. They deploy convoys of snowplows, trucks and even helicopters to help clear the road as fast as possible. They're also quick to rescue any broken down or bogged vehicles because stationary traffic is obviously more at risk than moving traffic. Keeping this stretch of road in good working order is a constant challenge, especially in winter. So with a combination of risk analysis, snow clearing, public awareness and road closures, we're able to drastically reduce the odds of anyone being caught in an avalanche. Having said that though, nothing, especially nature, is 100% predictable. The only way to absolutely guarantee motorists' safety would be to close the road permanently. And look what we'd be missing out on. As you drive along this road in the comfort of your vehicle, spare a thought for the men and women who battled the elements to make your journey possible. Conceived long ago before the modern machinery we have now, this road is the product of true determination, built with picks and shovels and sheer willpower, and for many years was both the home and the livelihood of the people who built it. The Milford Road was first proposed around the time that the Milford Track was built in the late 1880s, as it became clear that the track would not be suitable for vehicles. The Otago Provincial Council wanted a route from Queenstown to Milford so they could send the area's gold out more easily. It would probably have followed the Greenstone or Capels track from Lake Whakatipu across the divide and then continued along this route. One of Jamestown's early settlers, Mr. Henry Homer, explored the area and discovered that the only thing hampering access to Milford was a mountainous ridge that became known as the Homer Saddle. He figured out that drilling a tunnel through this wall of rock would make the whole thing possible. He pressured the authorities to build it, and in 1890 a surveyor did a feasibility study and concluded that it could be done. For some reason, no action was taken at the time, and the findings were filed away for 30 years. The Otago Gold Rush faded away, and the focus moved to Te Anau rather than Queenstown. In the mid-1920s, work began on the first stretch of road along Lake Teano. It was very narrow and precarious in places, but you could just about squeeze a car through, which was good news for the local farmers who had previously had to transport their wool by boat. In 1929, the Global Depression hit, and countless men lost their jobs. Pondering the crisis, some bright spark in the government found the ideal way to create a few jobs. They employed 200 men to widen and improve the new road along Lake Teano, initially to Teano Downs. As the depression continued, so did the road's progress, with construction passing the downs and reaching right up to the divide by the end of 1933. Homer's old tunnel campaign and the feasibility plans were taken out and dusted off with a view to linking the new road into it. Suddenly, the Milford Road was all happening. 46 years after Homer had first had the idea, five men armed with picks and shovels hacked through to the solid bedrock of the Homer Saddle and brought in the heavy machinery to start drilling. Because it was such a remote area, the road builders and engineers lived in makeshift camps along the road. As the road pushed forward into the mountains, the camp would pack up and move with it. In fact, you can see the remains of the old concrete bakehouse from one of the camps as we approach Homer Tunnel, so keep an eye out for that on your right. Life for the road camp men was risky. For starters, they were digging the tunnel downhill, which meant that the 8,000 gallons of icy cold melted snow that seeped into the tunnel every hour simply collected in a big cold lake in the exact area where they needed to work. This meant they had to install and run noisy pumps to get it out. They also drilled the tunnel through by the shortest route, but this put it in a frequent avalanche zone. One worker was killed by an avalanche in 1936, and two more the following year. In 1945, an avalanche destroyed a concrete avalanche-proof tunnel that led to the entrance. Needless to say, it wasn't rebuilt. After years of living, working, and raising families in these hazardous and harsh conditions, there was literally light at the end of the tunnel. Having hacked and dynamited their way through 1.2 kilometers of solid rock, the workers emerged into daylight in the Cleddau Valley. Soon after, work ceased on the project for a while. The camps packed up and the families moved away, because the outbreak of the Second World War meant that everyone was needed elsewhere for the war effort. The Milford Road lay quiet for nearly a decade, but the bulk of the work was done, and in 1951, when the project resumed, it just needed the finishing touches and a road link from the tunnel down to Milford Sound. In 1954, the tunnel was officially opened, meaning that public traffic could finally rumble the 121 kilometres of unsealed road all the way from Teano to Milford. The first section of the road was sealed in the 1960s, and in the 1970s it was opened all year round. Well, now that we are approaching the famous tunnel, I'll tell you a little bit about what to expect as we go through it. First of all, the road will get a bit bendy as we climb towards it. The entrance to the tunnel lies 945 metres above sea level, and it then runs downhill to emerge in the Cleddau Valley with a 1 in 10 descent inside. Although there's now lighting inside the tunnel, it'll still be quite dark inside, so you must turn on your headlights before you enter and take off your sunglasses. It's wide enough for two-way traffic, but still fairly snug, and the walls are bare rock. What with that and the steep descent, you'll need to take it slowly, and don't try to overtake. There's a pullover area just outside each end of the tunnel if you need a breather. The tunnel runs for more than a kilometer through the mountain ridge, and when you get out, you'll be confronted with quite a steep and winding descent into the valley that will continue to demand your full attention. When we reach the other side, we'll be emerging into the Cleddau Valley, which is sometimes called the Valley of 1,000 Waterfalls. Have a look around and see how many you can count. We then pass through the two avalanche gates at the far side, and the road becomes straighter and flatter. As we descend back down into the lowland broadleaf forest, you'll see a sign on the left for the chasm. There's also a very nice short walk there, which will only take 10 minutes. It'll reward you with the sight of the Cleddau River, which has formed natural sculptures of smooth and craggy rock formations.